overview of state grants and the Office of Grants Management, its structure and role, and then I will highlight some information I know is of interest, having listened to your discussion last week. To level set, this slide provides a very high overview of the grants landscape in Minnesota. As you are aware, the Office of Grants Management, or OGM, as I will refer to it, is an office within the Department of Administration that supports state agencies in grants administration by standardizing, streamlining, and improving grant-making practices. The OLA highlighted the other day that their audit work discovered that OGM is ahead of the curve, being one of only a dozen states that has statewide grants management policies in place. Grants are financial assistance paid or services furnished by a state agency via a third party to an eligible recipient. Minnesota has a decentralized state grants management system, which means that grant-making authority and decision-making, implementation, and performance monitoring of grants lie with individual state agencies. State grants are regulated by state law and by policy, and the requirements span the full life cycle of the grant, from pre-award through active grant to post-award and closeout. The 13 policy framework established and maintained by OGM covers requirements for requests for proposals, conflict of interest, application review, risk assessment, grant execution, grantee reporting, monitoring, payments, financial reconciliation, grant closeout, and final evaluation. This slide shows a very high-level summary of how OGM fulfills their mission to standardize, streamline, and improve state grant-making practices and increase public information about state grants opportunities. So this, you'll just see, gives just a very kind of the high touch points of the work that OGM does in terms of policy development, training and guidance, best practices, risk analysis and reduction. And I'll go through this all in more detail as we move through the presentation. OGM was created in 2007 based on an OLA recommendation. This slide illustrates the capacity of the office since 2007. When the OLA conducted the 2023 program evaluation that was discussed last week, OGM was a team of four, three of which were dedicated to administering admin's own portfolio of about 130 grants, totaling just under $60 million. That left one team member to do the entirety of policy work, training, and technical assistance for the entire state enterprise. That one team member developed the first iteration of OGM's 13 policies, conducted numerous trainings annually to both state grants administrators and grant recipients, and provided technical assistance. Repeated efforts for this for the funding of this office were unsuccessful until 2023. The expanded office is now led by an enterprise grants managing director with teams focused on policy and compliance and admin's own grant portfolio management. As you can see from this slide, OGM is funded for 12 members with 8 positions currently working in the expanded office. Additional positions will be filled as the office's implementation work continues. And then once all of those positions are filled, the vision is that the office will drive innovation, alternative strategies, and collaboration across sectors to improve state grants administration and outreach. And they will do more data collection and analysis that will inform steps for state granting agencies to take in order to establish outcome measurement and reduce system barriers. Before I move into the expanded compliance and oversight measures enacted during the 2023-2024 biennium, I just wanted to highlight that OGM is also a resource to the public in seeking grant opportunities through the website min.gov/grants. So moving into the expanded oversight. We would like to thank the legislature for the substantial investments made to the grants landscape during the 2023-2024 biennium. These investments related to additional compliance and oversight work to alleviate the potential for fraud, waste, and abuse in state government programs. While various state agencies also sought individualized investments related to grant making, the legislative changes I will highlight provided OGM with additional oversight of state grants, including the power to terminate a grant if deemed to be not in the best interest of the state, and the ability to suspend or prohibit grantees for receiving grants for cause. I will talk through these investments in compliance and accountability in detail over the next several slides. First, the Office of Grants Management has strengthened oversight. The changes highlighted on this slide were all new requirements located in the 2023 State Government Finance Bill. So starting with an expansion of OGM. There was strengthening of admins grants oversight authority within OGM by requiring agencies to fully cooperate with OGM on grants oversight. It also authorizes rulemaking if and as needed. There was a strengthening of OGM's authority to establish and enforce versus only proposing grants management policies. It also gives OGM the authority to suspend or debar grantees for up to 3 years for cause, and requires agencies to submit their grant contracts for approval prior to issuance for certain contract amounts. Grant agreements are not valid unless approved by the Commissioner of Administration, and it authorizes OGM to oversee grant management systems. Agencies must report to OGM at request on the status of any grant, and it authorizes OGM to audit grants. And then finally, as I mentioned previously, it authorizes the Commissioner of Administration to terminate a grant if not in the best interests of the state. Moving into requirements of grantee performance evaluation, this was also something that was discussed last week with the legislative auditor. There was a discussion that focused on part of the 2023 OLA report that indicated that 25% of nonprofit grantees receive grants from multiple agencies. This brings up the issue about opportunities for collaboration and information sharing about grantee performance. In April 2024, OGM launched a new grantee evaluation site where agencies are now required to upload performance evaluations for grants over $25,000. This requirement applies to grants issued after April 1st, 2024. And agencies must upload the evaluation within 60 days after the closeout of the grant. As grants are completed, agencies will soon be uploading these evaluations into the new system. This will allow other granting agencies and the public to see information about grants. Most grant evaluations will be posted in or by the summer of 2025. In this process, grantees may also submit their own written response to the evaluation. For a little bit more context related to the evaluations, the state of Minnesota's grantee evaluation policies are aimed at helping agencies drive understanding about the benefits grant-funded activities provide to Minnesotans. They also offer insights into the impact of agency grant-making efforts and support our responsible stewardship of public dollars. The required performance measures that you will see in the form include a description of grant purpose, proposed and actual grant outcomes, measure of compliance with reporting requirements, high-level monitoring and financial reconciliation results, note of unresolved issues or termination, and agency satisfaction with grantee timelines, quality of work, and overall performance. A reminder about the decentralized nature of grant making in the state, and that this is a baseline, which means agencies may have additional evaluation requirements or processes in place. Right now, agencies are working on weaving these new requirements into their workflows and grant materials. So you could be wondering, how will these evaluations be used when determining future grant awards? Templates and best practices are in use, are currently under development. We're in the process of developing training and supports for this work. We need to better understand what agencies are currently doing to consider past performance within their own processes and are examining best practices in the public and private granting communities, such as how foundations are doing this and weighting past performance in making decisions about grant awards. The next topic I will cover is the concept of administrative funds. So in the new requirements, there is an authorization that agencies can retain funds for grant administration if the grant appropriation is otherwise silent. This applies to new legislatively named grants and new competitive grants. And agencies can use up to 5% for legislatively named grants and up to 10% for new competitive grants. I want to focus really for a couple of minutes on how important this requirement is. As you've heard me talk about and as you'll hear me talk about, there are many compliance and oversight aspects that grant-making staff within state agencies have to comply with. And that doesn't go without funding. So it was incredibly important that this was implemented to allow for the adequate staff capacity who can then be properly trained to make sure that all of this work is happening appropriately. Moving into pre-award risk assessment. So this was the largest new requirement that was implemented in the new statutory scheme. After the 2023 session, the growing OGM team focused its work on the implementation of the pre-award risk assessment statute that was effective January 15th of 2024. The work entailed an expansion of OGM policy number 0806, creation of a toolkit, and training and rollout of new requirements to state agencies. So the requirements include financial review of grant and business subsidy recipients. It defines grants as $50,000 or more, defines a grantee as a political subdivision, a nonprofit, or a business entity. It requires granting agencies to perform a pre-award risk assessment to determine if the potential grantee could perform the required duties. It requires information as applicable, including history of performing duties similar, and if those duties will be at a significantly increased scale or require significant changes to the operation of the organization. It requires grantees to submit their most recent Form 990 or board-reviewed financial statements. It requires a business entity's most recent federal and state tax returns, current financial statements, certification that the business is not under bankruptcy proceedings, and a disclosure of liens on assets. It requires evidence of good standing with the Minnesota Secretary of State, and most recent independent audit reports if otherwise required in statute. It requires certification that none of the grantees, public officials, board members, or staff with access to grant funds have been convicted of a felony financial crime in the last 10 years. It also authorizes agencies to require additional information for new grantees to provide enhanced oversight as necessary. The toolkit that OGM developed supported state agencies to effectively and swiftly implement the new pre-award risk assessment requirements. And content of the toolkit included a workflow for each type of grantee to help agencies ensure all required steps are followed, a pre-award risk assessment checklist, sample letters for agencies to communicate with potential grantees, financial review forms, risk plan templates, tip sheets on oversight and internal controls, and an FAQ. Agencies have been steadily conducting these assessments, and it is clear that these efforts are working to mitigate identified risks. I want to point your attention to, there's a two-pager in your packet. The first page just goes over kind of what OGM is in high level. But on page 2 in the blue, dark blue area, We've collected data from 5 state grant-making agencies. We will be collecting more data from additional agencies toward the end of the month. But this is our early risk assessment data analysis. So you'll see that over 1,500 pre-award risk assessments have been completed. There have been 56 instances where agencies have needed more information to satisfy concerns. You'll see that 3 grants were terminated with or without cause based on that pre-award risk assessment. And there were 46 instances that additional information did resolve concerns when requested. So I am going to just quickly walk you through OGM's website just to show where some of these documents are located. The first tab that you see here are all of OGM's policies. So this is where state grant-making staff can go to reference the policy, a brief description. They can click on it. It has all of the kind of documentation of what that policy entails. The new toolkit at the top is under 16B.981. That's the pre-award risk assessment statute. And you'll see that there are links to all of the forms and templates that I described. So this is where you'll have the sample letters that agencies can use. This is the content overview for the risk assessment. So it's just kind of that booklet that agencies can follow in doing that. And then you'll see documents like this, where it's an actual checklist that it has instructions for agencies, and they can go through and identify and document when they do that risk assessment. So this is the proper documentation that agencies will have in doing that risk assessment. And then turning back to our presentation, this is related to the training that has been developed as part of this toolkit. So on this slide, you'll see that there's an overview of the new statute, overview of competitive grant requirements, single sole source requirements, and legislatively named requirements. And then it goes through those sample templates and checklists in more detail. So agencies have kind of proper resources to understand how to do this work. In this pre-award risk assessment, it also includes the authority for state agencies to not award grants upon completion of that risk assessment. And the process is set out in detail. If the agency determines there is a risk that a competitive grantee cannot perform the duties of the grant, there's a process outlined for not awarding. The agencies must contact the grantee and give them 30 days to respond and satisfy the agency's concerns, or develop a plan with the agency to satisfy their concerns. If the agency still has concerns, they can choose not to award. They must notify the grantee and include the process for contesting that decision, and they must notify the Department of Administration. The grantee can contest the decision not to award no later than 15 business days after receiving the notice. And then the agency has 15 days to consider the contest and either choose to reverse or continue the decision not to award. The final decision by the agency may be challenged as a contested case under Chapter 14 within 30 business days of written notification of the final agency decision. If the agency determines there is a risk to a legislatively named grantee, the process is a little bit different. Similar, agencies must contact the grantee and give them 30 days to respond and satisfy the concerns or develop a plan. If the agency still has concerns, the agency must delay award of the grant until adjournment of the next regular or special legislative session. The agency must contact the grantee, admin, and chairs of the ranking members of House Ways and Means and Senate Finance Committees with evidence of their concerns and reasons for not awarding. A grantee can contest this decision, similar to the competitive grants, no later than 15 days after receiving the notice, and then the agency has 15 days to consider the contest and either reverse or continue to not award. The legislature then may reaffirm the award of the grant or reappropriate the funds to a different grantee based on their analysis. If the legislature does not provide direction to the agency, the funds revert to the original appropriation source. Agencies may also grant funds to a grantee to help them with this financial review requirement, so to get an audit or develop financial documentation, and the funds are subject to enhanced monitoring, additional reporting, and other reasonable requirements. So moving into the training aspect. So additional capacity in OGM has allowed them to expand the training offered to state agencies. OGM is rolling out more courses and platforms to enhance and expand the number of state employees trained on grants policy requirements, aiming for content tailored to different levels of state experience and familiarity with OGM grant policies. OGM is planning for learning pathways, diversified content, and broader access. Currently, OGM has 9 on-demand trainings on its website, 7 of which were produced in 2024. Nearly 300 state staff have attended one or more of the 9 virtual and in-person trainings that OGM delivered since July 1st of 2024. 7 more virtual trainings are scheduled for the remainder of fiscal year 25, including 2 this month. And the course offerings include overview of grant administration, financial reconciliation and grants management, grant monitoring, and grantee evaluation. OGM is working diligently to make an introduction to grants administration 3-course training series available in the state's online employee training system by the end of this month. It would be reasonable that this series could be made mandatory. And the series includes Module 1, which is State Grant Making Basics, Module 2, Grant Administration Overview, and Module 3, OGM Grant Policy Framework. We also have dozens of trainings, templates, and other materials that you saw in my brief walkthrough of the website, and are prioritizing updating the content and making the website more user-friendly. This will be a priority in the upcoming biennium. I did want to highlight specifically our financial reconciliation training because that was a topic of discussion last week. The financial reconciliation training was developed in 2013. That training has been provided in person and virtually by OGM to executive branch granting agencies at a minimum of on a biennial basis. There is also an online training on financial reconciliation on OGM's website. The training is periodically updated and refreshed to reflect policy revisions and helpful case study materials to support training participants with skill building. Recently, OGM worked with DHS in 2023 to customize and refresh this training to support 2 training tracks, one for supervisors and managers and one for grant staff. The customized trainings were provided in the spring of 2023. OGM will be providing virtual training on financial reconciliation in March and April, upcoming, to a cross-agency audience. The other aspect that admin received funding in the 2023-2024 biennium was related to a grants enterprise grants management system study. Some of the conversation last week focused on the need for a single enterprise grants management system. Admin was appropriated funds to conduct this study of the feasibility of utilizing an enterprise grants management system. A consultant has been conducting its study over the last 11 months, and discussions with impacted agencies is proceeding and will be followed by convening MMB, MINIT, and admin and other impacted agencies to discuss next steps. The grants management feasibility study was to determine if a single system is feasible. It will also examine available technology options, recommended changes to organization controls and processes, staffing and other needs, high-level system requirements, estimated costs, and an implementation roadmap. I want to hop over to the OLA recommendation and implementation updates by OGM. The work that has taken place since the 2023-2024 legislative sessions to build the OGM team and tackle significant work assigned by the legislature and recommended by the OLA has been substantial. I would like to highlight some of the work now, particularly in areas that received discussion last week. Since the 2023 legislative session, OGM has made important progress on implementing the new controls and oversight of state grants. We have accomplished this work by updating OGM policies that impact all executive branch state grant-making entities, increasing OGM staff, and expanding risk-related assessment, training, and technical assistance. OGM updated its grants management policies and procedures applicable to all agencies to reflect the statutory changes, and OGM strengthened certain policies, including adding specificity to the policy on pre-award risk assessment. OGM updated over 40 template documents to reflect the policy changes and to assist agencies in policy compliance. All OGM policies that govern state grant making and corresponding templates are on our website, as you saw. And that concludes my formal presentation. I really thank you for your time, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Christensen. We actually have a lot of questions, so I appreciate it. But members, I was told that the mics weren't working properly when we first opened the meeting. And so we are going to just quickly have you restate your name for the record, and we are going to have to reapprove the minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Stacey Christensen. For the record, I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration.
Thank you very much. We'll get back to you with questions. Vice Chair Anderson, would you like to approve the minutes?
I will move minutes of the approval of the minutes from our meeting last week. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm sorry. So Vice Chair Anderson has moved approval of the minutes from February 10th, 2025. And is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you. I apologize for that interruption in our business. So if you don't mind, I'd like to start with some questions and then open it up for a discussion. It was a very excellent presentation. I appreciate your time and being here and all the work that your office is doing. I'm glad to see those numbers increase in staffing because I do think that will help quite a bit. Part of me wished I would have just interrupted along the way, but I didn't want to interrupt your flow. But I have so many questions, so maybe if we could just go back. So first, you talk about these 13 policy frameworks, and you do have 9 policy trainings. But in each of those frameworks, is there a training or is there going to be an attempt to align the training with those frameworks? Could you just talk about that for a little bit?
Sure. So thank you, Madam Chair. I think that the each policy is probably, I don't want to say not as important as the other, but a lot of the policies overlap. And so there's not necessarily going to be one dedicated training per policy because sometimes a policy is one page, and so it doesn't kind of contemplate an entire training on that policy. So if you consider kind of an overview of grant administration, that is probably going to entail most of the policies. Some of the policies that are more detailed, like the pre-award risk assessment, that needs its own dedicated kind of training module, if you will. So the 9 trainings don't necessarily align with the 13 policies because not all of the policies are kind of created equal, if that makes sense.
That does. Thank you. So I'm going to ask one more question, then I'll open it up because I could take the entire time myself, and I don't want to do that. When you talked about the new tools on slide 6 and the expanded oversight and the changes from 2023, I did a deep dive on that over the weekend. I have a lot of questions just based on that. But one of them is that you can terminate a grant if it's not in the best interest of the state. But my understanding, based on the conversation with the OLA last week, is that that is completely optional, that you may, but not that you must. There's no threshold where a grant award is automatically suspended. Do you think the may language is sufficient, or how do you view that role for OGM?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is an excellent question, and you're absolutely correct. It is a discretionary duty. It has come to OGM just a couple of times recently related to grants that are in place. So we don't have a lot of data with that new requirement to know, if it should be something mandatory. But, you know, certainly within kind of the legislature's discretion, that could be pivoted to something that's not just discretionary but mandatory.
Thank you. And one follow-up. How many grants have you used that authority to terminate since you got the authority in 2023?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe it's been two or three grants.
And could you quickly describe what those were and for what reasons they were terminated?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will have to get that information from you. I don't have that kind of at my fingertips right now.
Great. Thank you. All right. Opening it up to member questions. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad we're here talking about this. It's been a good process so far. I mean, and the way I look at this, this is the kind of the way things ought to work. A problem was identified. We commissioned the OLA to study it and come up with recommendations. In response to the OLA's recommendations, the legislature made changes to the legislation. We appropriated resources to allow Ms. Christensen and her staff to beef up their staff, create the training resources. The implementation is obviously going really well. And we were already one of only 12 states that had a program like this at all. I think by the time this process, plays itself out, we're going to end up being the exemplar that other states look to for how to do this right. So this is the kind of work that I find really satisfying. You know, I can't claim to have played any role in this one, but this to me looks like an example of the process working out the way it's supposed to.
Good. Did you have any questions for Ms. Christensen?
I'm sorry?
Did you have a question for Ms. Christensen?
No, I think Ms. Christensen is a rock star. This isn't the only forum in which we're both members of the Minute Technical Advisory Committee's Data Sharing Committee, and she's one of the co-chairs of that committee, and that also is very, very satisfying work. So,
excellent. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Elkins. Any other members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I have some questions about the study. So on the single grants management system, you said that they're working on things. I don't know when that started. Where are we at in that process completely? When is that going to be done?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, we're wrapping up work. It should be the kind of first step of the feasibility of it should be wrapping up very shortly.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. So the feasibility portion. Beyond that, so let's say, obviously it's feasible. So beyond that, what about actually putting in a state grants management system? Something that is, with the legislation was heading towards. And also on top of that, within whether it's your website or another website, probably would have to be within your office, where people can actually see all the different agencies that have been awarded grants, the dollar amount, their 990s, everything that is required for a grant recipient to get, including in the end, the whatever is being done now to tie it up, in the end. So it's all public information, easy to reach for the public. Is that part of this, and is there a movement to do that within your agency? Is that part of the whole grants management system, potentially, the statewide grants management? Because that's, I think, what is needed. So thank you.
Ms. Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. And yes, that is part of the kind of implementation roadmap discussion that admin is going to have to work very closely with MMB and Minute on kind of talking about next steps and how that process works through its way.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. So what's the time frame on that? I mean, this was passed 2 years ago, so I'm wondering where the time frame is. So you say we wrap up the feasibility study. by when, you know, and then what would be the timeframe to actually be able to create the system that was asked to be created potentially by the legislature?
Ms. Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the legislative requirement was to conduct a feasibility study. And so that will be wrapping up shortly, and then the discussions will continue related to whether and if that is feasible and how that implementation works. I don't have a specific timeline on that. It's a substantial undertaking to do something like that, both financial and, you know, capacity-wise. So those discussions are just going to begin to happen once the study is concluded.
Last one, Representative
Anderson. Yeah, thank you. And then I'm getting your staff. So you're up to 8 staff in the office now. When did those, you know, you were at 4 2 years ago. When were those people added to, did you go right from 4 to 8? Less in the summer of 23, or were they just added recently?
Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we started by hiring the Enterprise Grants Management Director, and then she went and hired staff accordingly. So she built the office once she was brought on board.
Thank you. Can you tell me when? Thank you. About, I mean, are we just now at 8, or were we at 8? The summer of 23.
Ms. Christensen.
Madam Chair, we were, Representative Anderson, we were at 8 shortly after the summer of, I mean, probably into the fall, winter. But yes, the staff has been on board for a bit now.
Okay, thank you. I'll let.
Thank you. And I just in follow up to that regarding the Enterprise Grants Management System, I also wanted to better understand. I get it's a study, but you mentioned you've had a consultant working on the study. Can you tell me how many people are working on it and how much you are paying for the study?
Madam Chair, I do not have that information at my fingertips. There's one dedicated staff member within OGM that is the kind of project manager with the consultant. I don't know off the top of my head how many individuals within the consultant's organization are working on it. Our Enterprise Grants Managing Director, we have an assistant commissioner that's overseeing it. And the cost of the study was approximately $800,000. That was what was appropriated to us.
Thank you. Okay, well, no one else. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Christensen. Just taking from your entire presentation, I'm seeking to understand, based upon the information that we heard last week, from the legislative auditor, who bears the responsibility for the grant management practices within each individual state agency? Is it your office, or is it the grant managers within an individual state agency?
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Schultz, it is decentralized. So the ultimate authority in grants management sits within individual state agencies to do manage their grants. The Office of Grants Management, as you saw, provides kind of technical assistance and training and best practices to make sure that staff have the information and capacity knowledge that they need, but it does, the responsibility to manage the grants does sit within individual agencies.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Christensen. So given that and the vast variety of state agencies that we have with a whole bunch of different processes, you touched on this very lightly in your presentation, but how much do you have to change your training modules or seminars to fit the given state agency thus far?
Ms. Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, great question. So the training that OGM provides is really that baseline of what the policies say. with the caveat in every training that every agency can set their own policies that are stricter. They have different procedures. We receive requests from individual agencies, as I highlighted, DHS had requested to kind of develop a more catered training to that particular agency based on their requirements. So in that situation, OGM would work with the agency, try to understand what their additional policies and procedures were, and to help the agency do that training. But the kind of training that is available on the website and that is just conducted generally is the baseline training of policies. And then, of course, telling agencies you may have your own kind of stricter policies that you have to comply with.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think these answers have added additional questions for me. A part of that would be throughout the trainings that you've already provided, you mentioned that you have trained about 300 state employees. Minnesota has, according to what I'm finding right online, 55,000 state employees. So of the 55,000, how many touch and assist in the management of grants, and how does that compare to the 300 that you have trained to this point?
Ms. Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, great question. So we tried to do a little bit of digging to prep for that question, and it's not an easy answer. So the closest that we could get is kind of looking at the latest payroll snapshot. There are about 225 individuals in state government that have kind of the grants classification series. That is a bit misleading because we also have managers and supervisors that may be grants managers. We also have individuals in different classifications that, you know, they manage other kind of responsibilities or programs, and then they may get a grant and they've been kind of other duties as assigned. They now manage that grant. So it's the snapshot tells us, you know, there are the classifications are around 200, but there we probably know that there are more people that touch grants management in the state.
Thank you, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess one question I would have would be, there are grants that come from a number of different state agencies. Are there any state agencies that have been complicit in getting this training on board, and any that we should be directly concerned about today?
Ms. Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, not that come to mind. That's certainly not, you know, we know the people that we train, but we, you know, I think every state agency has been participating in some sort of training module. So I wouldn't say that there's anyone in particular that comes to mind.
Thank you. And Representative Elkins, I'll get to you in just one second, but that raised a question for me, Ms. Christensen. In your powers that we delegated in 2023, it says that the commissioner has the authority to review grants management practices and establish and enforce policy and procedure improvements. So, but in response to Representative Schultz, you indicated that really it's the agency's responsibility to enforce these policies. So clearly you've been delegated enforcement authority by the legislature. How do you, in practice, view your role of enforcing grants best practices on the agencies?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great question. So I think as we kind of are moving into the additional expansion of the office, and you know, now that we've kind of developed the required trainings and updated the policies, we're going to move more into that compliance area and doing some additional data collection that we will require from agencies to basically tell us how they're doing. And then we'll be able to have a better landscape to kind of individualize technical assistance or, you know, if we need to do auditing or any of that work based on the data that we receive or don't receive from agencies. So that work is going to be continuing into the next millennium.
Thank you. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This time I do have a question. Ms. Christensen, you know, part of the great deal of the success that you've achieved so far is the fact that at the same time the legislature was strengthening the statutes, we also made an appropriation to allow you to go from one employee to four to now 12. Do you anticipate coming to us to ask for additional resources to complete the remaining work, or do you think you have enough people right now to complete the remaining work that's on your plate?
Ms. Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, I believe that the office is adequately staffed for the current requirements that the legislature has given to OGM to kind of work.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you wouldn't mind, I was going to turn to Mr. Johnson. He had some information about a previous question. Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members, there was just a question about the appropriation related to the Enterprise Grants Management System. Just for specificity, the legislature appropriated $735,000 in fiscal year 2024 and $201,000 in fiscal year 2025 for that purpose. So the total appropriation is $936,000. Obviously, the Department of Administration may or may not use all that money. Anything that's not used would cancel. It is a one-time appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. So I want to go back to a comment that the OLA made when she was here last week that I still, it's still resonating with me today during your presentation. You've gone through a lot of areas where you're talking about providing best practices, collaboration. I took some notes on, which unfortunately I can't read very well right now, but your posture is certainly to provide support to the agencies, training to the agencies, and I think that's important. But the sense of accountability, and I think the OLA used the word we need to be more skeptical as we work with grantees and agencies. She, I think, would suggest that we've done so much to hand out money and so much to provide training, but there's been less on the accountability side. And one of the things that struck me is in the list of programs, there's no training on fraud prevention. There's no training on fraud detection. So I'm concerned that we're still not taking this seriously. We have the highest amount of fraud related to COVID in the country, and $610 million and counting last time there was a calculation. So I appreciate the need to train. I think that's important. But I was actually hoping to hear a little more robust discussion on the accountability side, which still we have not heard. Could you talk about how you are going to hold agencies accountable? And if do you need more legislative authority to do that in your mind? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great question. And I don't want to speak out of turn at all, but I know that MMB and their internal controls unit is in the process of developing exactly the training that you have talked about, the kind of fraud red flags, fraud prevention, that type of work, which sits squarely in the internal controls realm. So OGM has really focused their training on policy compliance and oversight, moving into kind of our brand new authorities that we never had kind of that enforcement authority before, but now we do. So we are hoping to partner with MMB and their internal controls unit to really dig into those exact topics that you're talking about, and, you know, make sure that that kind of fraud prevention and internal controls training is robust. It's a bit outside of OGM's scope, and so we're happy to kind of partner with MMB and be on that work going forward.
Thank you for that answer. So I don't understand why it's outside of your scope. To me, internal controls is essential to grants management. So do we need to provide more specificity on that? Why is this just not like the first rung of grants management and oversight?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding is that kind of MMB has always had the statutory authority over internal controls, and that kind of delineation in authorities has been clear. The authority that OGM has is related to, you know, kind of state grants policy. And so that's why I think it just becomes incumbent for OGM to partner with MMB on kind of developing that training going forward.
Thank you for clarifying that. If you wouldn't mind, I recognize there's another question, but I'd like to turn to Mr. Johnson. Mr. Johnson, could you outline for us the different statutory authorities for MMB having sort of the internal controls piece and OGM perhaps not? And is that something we would need to clean up in statute or clarify? Because it seems to me that if you don't have or you don't perceive you have the authority, like, what are we doing? We created this whole new agency. And if there's no internal controls, like, it's honestly stunning to me. Mr. Johnson, can you help us?
Madam Chair, I'm afraid I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. MMB traditionally does have a lot of control over the sort of day-to-day in and out. Obviously, with the finances, that generally is their area of control. But in terms of your specific question, I'm going to need to do some research and get back to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, because this seems to be one of the benefits of the committee, honestly, is that we discover these lapses in statute where we really need to fix things and better align them so that everyone's rowing in the same direction. So I look forward to that response and maybe working on that. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. And I guess some of it is about our work on this committee, and I do have a question, but it seems to me that when we're talking about some of the business model of fraud that we saw, whether it's Feed Our Future and whether it's the autism centers, in many cases what we're talking about is not a grant, but providers of services, right? And so I guess my first question is, does the Office of Grants Management, do you all oversee federal Medicaid, federal funding, federal food funding? Is that sort of in your purview?
Ms. Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative, great question. No, not at all. And I think that that is a really important distinction, that kind of the big fraud that we've seen recently is related to Medicaid, federal aid. It is not related to state grants. And so it really does fall outside of OGM scope.
Representative Green.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think we have looked, obviously, the legislature in response to the 2007 and the 2023 OLA audit has been doing a lot to ensure that when there's state grants, we are setting up all of the process and procedures in place. And you all have done a lot. I think that there's more conversation to have. To me, it seems like as we're thinking about the work of this committee and why we are all here at 8:15 in the morning on Mondays and want to be here, is looking at and digging into whether we're talking about the business model in Feed Our Future, whether we're talking about the autism centers, whether to look at, one, what that fraud looks like. What that fraud looks like, what it looks like for those providers, overpayments of Medicaid, and then sort of back into and have the conversation about what our state government, state agencies need to ensure that there's correct oversight. Feels like we got to start with the problem. I think that this has been a really helpful and important conversation, but I do think we got to, when we're talking about state grants, we're having one conversation. When we're talking about the federal provision of Medicaid or food programs, that's obviously a different mechanism, and so we should dig into those individually so that we can come up with the right solutions to those problems to protect both taxpayers and the folks who are entitled to those benefits.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. I appreciate the distinction, and I would note that in some of these cases, the pass-through money from the feds is then sub-awarded to different grantees, so I do think there's some overlap, but there is also a distinction, and I appreciate you raising that. Let's see, was there another question? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just left today with ultimately, and this kind of comes from our conversation last week with the legislative auditor, talking about how we need culture change within agencies. And in part today, we're hearing this. The Office of Grants Management provides the training, but at some level, it's left to within the agency. But at some level, it's at MMB. But at some level, OGM has enforcement mechanisms. So for our testifier today, Ms. Christensen, what are the enforcement mechanisms that the Office of Grant Management has so that Minnesota taxpayers can know that we're not just passing the buck around state agencies.
Ms. Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative, and I think that the distinction that was made previously is important, that it's related to kind of state grants. And so in situations, you know, we can, you know, cancel grant if not in the best interest of the state, if it, you know, comes to our attention that there's something going on. We can do additional data collection. We can do additional kind of investigation in state agencies. But I think that in, you know, kind of, at least in the Medicaid space, we have zero ability to enforce that. That is a solely different kind of mechanism that is not related to state grants at all. I think in, you know, some of the other bigger ones, you know, Feeding Our Futures, mm-hmm. for example, that was federal aid that was provided to the Department of Education that comes with its own terms and conditions related to the federal aid program. And so the ability of OGM becomes nuanced depending on the type of federal money, even if it is kind of seen as a grant. But in the Medicaid space, there is no kind of ability for OGM to enforce in there.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just going to be just a quick follow-up. You know, it could be made mention about Feeding Our Future and Medicaid fraud, while at the same time realizing that over, you know, and for the purposes of your agency, for our conversation, for the state policy that we need to get right, and I'm so glad we've had conversations to bring us here this morning, there was $1 billion handed to nonprofit organizations, at least that much. I've seen figures larger than that in the last 2 years.
Right.
And so ultimately, my understanding is, you know, based upon what I'm reading in statute, you have the authority to enforce the policy and procedures. That's what I'm reading here. And ultimately, we need to have someone who's going to buck the system and you know, so far you've said that only 3 of these grants have been terminated if they weren't in line with that ultimate example of best interest of the state. And we're really needing to find that solution so that we're not seeing the buck passed around state agencies.
Ms. Christensen, would you care to respond?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think just my response to that is we're not seeing kind of that those big levels of fraud in state grants, in kind of that billion-dollar pot of money from state grants to nonprofits. And I think that that's kind of why that additional enforcement hasn't been needed. The big fraud that we're seeing that has come to light has been in Medicaid and other federal aid programs.
Thank you. I would like to just follow up on that with a quick point here, and I'm looking in my notes, but it seems that you do have more authority, and I'm just looking for it. It says, a grant agreement must, by its terms, permit the commissioner to unilaterally terminate the grant agreement prior to its completion if you determine that further performance under the grant would not serve agency purposes or is not in the best interest of the state. So we're not just talking about just best interest of the state. It is agency purposes. And it says the grant agreement must contain this unilateral termination authority. So do all grants currently, as part of best practices being written by the state, contain that unilateral termination authority?
Madam Chair, grants with state appropriations contain that template language.
Okay. And also, early in your presentation, I think you mentioned, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you oversaw about 130 grants for $60 million. Is that what I heard you say?
Madam Chair, yes, that is Department of Administration's own grants portfolio.
So, but your office has broader authority over all state grants, am I correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So what is that universe? Because I was struck by how small that is, especially the article that we've all seen from the Minnesota Reformer that shows, you know, more than $1 billion in just legislatively named grants. So it was a little bit, I think, surprising to hear you say 130 grants for 60 million. So please give us a better sense of the scope of your agency.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So yes, that is just admin's limited grant portfolio. And we have, you know, kind of small arts and cultural legacy grants, some grants to public television. Our grant portfolio is very small in the whole scheme of things. In looking at kind of the whole landscape, there are 32 state grant-making agencies and 775 grant programs that are subject to OGM's policies. The Department of Agriculture, MDH, DEED, DPS, Department of Health, and MnDOT all have over 50 programs each. We have an incomplete picture of grants at one time because it fluctuates. In fiscal year 2022-23, the state executed an estimated 17,000 new grant contracts and managed 30,000 active grant contracts. So we're looking at, for example, the data that we have from nine agencies has a total value of about $140 million. But that, again, is an incomplete picture. We don't have kind of all of that data collected yet.
Thank you. Yes, and $140 million sounds incredibly low, honestly. So I think providing that full picture to us as a committee would be incredibly helpful. So if you can get that to us, I'll make sure all the members get it. But I think there's a much larger scope here than I think the public was maybe understanding. And I want to just make sure that the public really is aware of the huge amount of work that we are granting out through nonprofits, and that we need to get a handle on this. So I encourage you to provide a more complete accounting of not only the agencies you oversee, and that's a lot, and the number of grant programs, but the dollar amount as well. So thank you for that. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to a certain degree, I really appreciate actually the conversation about whether it makes sense to provide services through grants to nonprofits. I think that's more of a conversation for us as a legislature, as a policy conversation. Many cases, I'd say whether, and I think some of those $1 billion of grants and hundreds of millions in other biennium is childcare, is housing, is food programs. And I was turning to, and I think I remember Representative Anderson, you saying it was your favorite page in the OLA audit, page 7, but where it talks about Department of Human Services, Education, Health, DEED, Commerce, and the amount of grants. And in many cases, that's a policy choice that we have made. Not all of those, I think, are legislative grants, but when they're legislatively directed grants, to fulfill a need with outsourcing it to a nonprofit. I think we do it in other ways to for-profits. There is a question if we want to provide, whether it's childcare or food aid, through our schools, which are public entities, we could do that. And in many cases, we have provided to do it privately through a nonprofit. I think that it's a really good and important conversation we should be having, because when it is a government entity, we have more transparency and oversight just built in. Whereas when it's a nonprofit or a for-profit, frankly, they have their independent board and they have different sets of incentives. And so I think from a policy conversation, I'm interested in that of what's the best way to provide the services people are asking for and need in a way that is both most transparent and also most accessible. And so I think to that point, both Representative Schultz and Robbins, that's to me a question of that we should be asking as a policy, as policymakers, and I'm looking forward to that conversation.
Thank you, Representative Greenman, and that's one of the values of having this committee. We have the time to have these deeper conversations. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, this is getting rapidly really philosophical, it feels like. And I think in good and helpful ways, I agree with you, because and I hadn't meant to go in this. I've got a couple other things, but just to build on Representative Greenman's point. Yeah, I mean, if we think to ourselves, as I hope that we all do, that people in our society have certain needs to meet, right? Certain needs that need to be met in various ways. And certainly one way to do that is think about private charity. One way to think about that is government and government programs. And then there's potentially this third way of saying, well, we're going to outsource it to nonprofits. And maybe in some ways there's been some tension between those two. We've sort of landed on this one, but then there are some disadvantages to it, as Representative Greenman talked about. And I do think some real advantages to having work done within government and all the controls and all the checks and all that. So just sort of, it's an interesting point thinking about those philosophies. But I wanted to just go back to the point I think it was Representative Schultz had made about when termination of grants occurs or when folks are prevented. I guess, Madam Chair, you brought this up as well. And I wonder if the commissioner could talk further about, so there were three that were terminated as being not in the best interest of the state. I guess I have the sense that there are probably other examples along the way where, you know, even before an award is made, you've got even an organization is legislatively named, but then they have to provide certain documentation. I think I'm aware of places where organizations have actually been prevented from receiving the grant because it turned out they couldn't meet hurdles. Sort of, is there something that prevents folks from receiving funding, organizations from receiving funding, besides just that termination of the best interests of the state? What are kind of the hurdles along the way?
Ms. Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Patil, great question, and this is something that is a significant barrier. We don't currently have authority to not award to a potential grantee. So the statutory scheme is for grantees, and so someone that is new, that authority doesn't exist. So that is something that admin is hoping to pursue to make sure that, you know, the situation exactly as you described it, that, you know, you don't have to currently be a grantee. You could also be a potential grantee and still have that same authority.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Deputy Commissioner, so I know that's true for you. I guess I believe it's the case, but please, and this may be just something we'll have to get back to us about, is that with individual agencies, there are a number of hurdles that are set up. You have to provide the, you know, 990. They've had to provide an indication that they're sort of their finances are adequate. And I guess so it does seem like there are pre-award hurdles that are within maybe more decentralized, but if you could just expand on that.
Ms. Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Pinto. Yes, and so our grant-making scheme is not, it's reimbursement-based. So, right. You know, grantees have to set up a budget and a work plan, and that all has to be kind of filtered through, you know, the individual state agencies. And then, you know, to some extent, you know, receipts have to be provided or invoices, and then there is that kind of look by the agency to make sure that they are actually receiving that money. So, you know, the pre-award risk assessment could go through, and you know, the agency determines they're viable, and then there could be a situation where, you know, they submit something and they want reimbursement, and the agency says, yeah, no, not quite, or I'm sensing something straight. So certainly along the way, there are stops, you know, that could be made. So it's not that, you know, the full award of the grant is kind of provided on the front end. It is reimbursement based on the work being completed along the way.
Okay, thank you. And the final topic, Madam Chair, if I can.
Of course.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so then, last thing, and this actually, Representative Greenman, who sent this to me, this will be a jump ahead of Mr. Johnson's research. There's a MMB statute, 16A.057, that says that MMB is responsible for the system of internal controls across the executive branch, and in particular, that it's responsible for, quote, to safeguard public funds and assets and minimize incidences of fraud, waste, and abuse. So at least it seems like in the statutory scheme, it is MMB's responsibility, if in case that's helpful. It may be something that we want to look at as a committee, Madam Chair, but that does seem like some information that's in statute now. Thank you, and thanks to the Commissioner.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Just one second. I just want to follow up on that. I appreciate that point about the difference between OGM's authority to terminate grants versus agencies, and I do note that in the 2023 law, agency authority, it says that agencies who require different information to determine whether there's substantial risk that the potential grantee cannot or would not be able to perform the required duties, the agency can give 30 notice for asking for additional information, and then they still must either create a plan to satisfy the concerns or not award a grant. So the agencies apparently have more authority to not award to the potential grantees than the OGM, and maybe that's something we mm-hmm. should better align. Right. So I think that's something we can look at. Would you like the authority to after a pre-risk assessment, say no, you're not getting the money? Ms. Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We appreciate the statutory scheme as it exists right now.
Oh, really? Why wouldn't you want that authority?
Madam Chair, we believe that it is working. It is best, you know, fit with the agencies to make those determinations. In each grant contract, they already agencies have the ability to do that termination. You know, something rising to the level of not in the best interest of the state, we feel best fits with the Commissioner of Administration.
I appreciate that clarification. I would note that you do currently have the authority to enforce all of these policies. So if you feel that the agency is not terminating and they should, you could still override that. And I think that's what we as members are looking for, is we want you to take a more active role. And so it's surprising to hear that answer, honestly, but I appreciate it. I'll go to Representative Anderson, and then I have another question.
Thank you. Before I start, Representative Pinto, there's a fourth way too, which is direct dollars to the individuals to make their own choices about what they buy, food, daycare, et cetera. So I just want to point that out. But I agree, and we should have philosophical discussions about this. So, and I think we do try to do some of that directly through refundable tax credits and that sort of thing. But that's... Yeah. The way that we avoid all of this, actually. So, let me just, so can you tell me why? So it sounds to me like you really look at your mission as setting policies, procedures, training for staff statewide. And I understand what you're thinking with that. Can you tell me why, though, for the example of the MDE, the Feeding Our Future? So that was federal money. I get the Medicaid. But that was then done through state grant making, even though it was federal dollars. So why isn't your agency, if that occurs again, because this is now, you know, you have new powers since 23, why would you feel that you have no authority because they're federal dollars? Do we need something different? Do we need to change something different? And then also, you know, there's been a lot of criticism of the agencies because there were no site visits, and it was very obvious that this fraud was occurring in all these programs if someone just would have showed up. Is that something that you have thought about putting into the policies and procedures and the recommended, and not optional and not... we'll tell you 2 weeks in advance that we're going to come and visit you, but actually random site visits like a lot of the regulatory. So can you answer all those different? Yeah. Many questions in one, but we're limited in time.
Ms. Christensen.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I will try to answer all of them. If I don't hit on them, mm-hmm. please stop me. So with the MDE, that was a federal aid program, which comes with its own terms and conditions. So those have to always be looked, and the agency, OGM doesn't have any insight into what those are. So the agency has to be responsible for knowing what kind of those terms and conditions they're following with that particular program. The other nuance in that situation, and I can't speak for MDE, but there was litigation. My understanding, you know, that was involved, and that was complicating that matter as well. And so, you know, to your question, you know, with these additional authorities, could something have been caught sooner than it was? Possibly. Mm-hmm. I think we just don't know the answer to the question because they were involved in litigation at that point as well. With regard to the unannounced site visit, so I want to make an important distinction that the OGM policy right now has information about monitoring visits, and that is where both the state agency and the grantee prepare in advance. They get, you know, kind of all of their documentation in order. They go out and, you know, they look at things and they do kind of, you know, look at finances and that type of thing. So that takes a significant amount amount of planning. I think, you know, something that has come to our attention recently, and I think what you're describing, is an unannounced kind of verification visit. And that is not anything that is either in statute or in policy right now. Right now, policy talks about monitoring, and there are rigorous requirements around that. And you know, we don't believe that an unannounced monitoring is going to be very efficient for anyone because there's no time to plan. But I think that it's worth having, you know, as a policy discussion, should there be something related to an unannounced verification visit? I think that's kind of a different kind of tactic that could be examined.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I would highly suggest that. So I have a business and I'm regulated by an agency that you oversee, and the Board of Cosmetology, and they come regularly unannounced. And the board's here. Okay, so, but that's exactly what is done everywhere, you know, and all these other things. And that would have solved all these problems early on if we had that sort of thing. And I guess it's a question for us is, and for legislators, you know, how do we make sure that that's happening? And whether that's something that you put in as recommended or we put that in statute. But that solves a lot of this, including the Medicaid issues. So, thank you.
Ms. Christensen, would you care to reply?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, I think that is worth a conversation for kind of the policymakers. You know, again, I want to make that distinction with Medicaid, that that's outside of kind of what we're talking about related to state grants. So that would be a different conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. If I may follow up on that. So, I mean, we don't have to put that in statute. You could put it in policy, is that correct? But you are choosing not to put the unannounced monitoring site visits in policy at this point?
Madam Chair, it is a kind of topic that has just come to our attention within the last couple of weeks. So I don't think that any decisions have been made, you know, not to do that. You know, I definitely think that the legislature, if they wanted to mandate that, could certainly put that into the statute.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. I do think we could mandate it. My concern is that I feel like with all these little things we put in statute, we are so micromanaging. To me, it's sort of common sense. Like, I don't know why we would have to mandate that, but if we do, I certainly am happy to look into it. But I do encourage you to use the authority you have been given. You have broader authority than I think you are acting on, and I certainly hope that you will seize that rather than wait for us to micromanage you, because I think it could become more of a burden. I know there's another question, but I had one I wanted to get to as well. We talked a lot about these pre-risk assessments. It's pre-award risk assessments and the trainings. And my understanding is that neither of those are mandatory, but they are recommended. So could you speak to what is mandatory, what is recommended, and if it's not mandatory, is that something you're looking for us to require, or is that something you may still require on your own?
Madam Chair, the pre-award risk assessment process is mandatory. That's in statute. That is something that agencies have to conduct. The training around how agencies kind of get up to speed on that, that is not anything that is required in statute. That was something that I believe the OLA pointed out in their report, that the legislature could require certain types of training or certain, you know, training topics. And that, you know, certainly is something that you could all discuss.
So, but you don't think you have the authority to require it currently?
Madam Chair, the authority that OGM has is related to policy, kind of enforcing policy and grant contract agreements, not specifically related to training. Individual state agencies could certainly require that their, you know, particular staff, you know, they can agencies mandate training all of the time for their employees. But the kind of broader training requirement, I believe, sits with the legislature.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So the second question I had was, you mentioned that there was grant money that you give out to help the grantees sort of get up to speed financially in financial best practices. Maybe if they have an audit requirement or if they have to provide additional financial statements to you. How much is given out on top of the grant for this financial help to grantees, and how do you track that?
Madam Chair, great question. That requirement sits within the grant dollars that is appropriated to the agency to give to the grantee. So there isn't, similar to the administrative funds, it would be kind of a holdback. So if a grantee, as part of their budget and work plan, said, we need some help kind of doing this, gathering our financial documents, kind of doing that, that would be part of their grant. So there isn't additional kind of appropriation that is given to admin above and beyond that grant. It would be, part of their budget would be kind of doing that financial kind of risk assessment with the agency. Individual state agency would determine if that was going to be part of their grant dollars.
Great, thank you. So perhaps I think that would be a helpful sort of walkthrough for us. The agency does the pre-risk assessment and then reports to you. And then if they need more help, the agency uses some of the supposed grant money to say, no, we're going to help you on the financial side to strengthen finances before we award the grant. Could you just walk us through the process? Where do you interface with that pre-risk assessment process?
Madam Chair, not at all. That is completely with the agency and the grantee. So the only kind of touch point we would have is if we receive notification from a state agency that they're not going to award the grant. And that's just a notification. We just receive that. And then they go through that kind of iterative process of the grantee provides more information, the agency makes a determination, and then it could move into a contested case process if the grantee wanted to pursue that.
Thank you. So when did you get involved in the three you did terminate? How did that happen?
Madam Chair, my understanding is the state agency notified us that they wanted admin to kind of utilize that authority. They explained to us the situation, and then we did that. It was not part of the pre-award risk assessment.
So the agency could have terminated it, but they asked you to do it instead.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Excellent. All right. Thank you for clarifying that. I'm sorry. Who is next? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just building off of that, then, Commissioner, it sounds like you receive notice from agencies when they, in fact, are not wanting to award. And in addition to those three, it sounds like there's a number of examples where they've given notice. Is it, in fact, the case? I see you shaking your heads. Maybe you can just sort of clarify that. Have you received such notices from agencies besides those three, or is it just those three?
I'm sorry, Ms. Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Pinto, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. And then, thank you, Madam Chair. And then I guess just a thought that's coming to me at this point in the conversation, building off Representative Greenman's earlier thought, is that I do think it does feel like we've got sort of a number of different issues here, feeding our future, Medicaid, et cetera, not passing through this process. And so I do think, Madam Chair, to the extent that we can, if it's possible, future hearings, or just seems like that would be really helpful to understand that. I wonder, in fact, if, at least as part of that, of having former U.S. Attorney Andy Lugar come in. Anyway, just sort of a thought, Madam Chair, for your consideration. But it does feel like understanding the problem deeply. I think it's been very useful these first two hearings to kind of, as Representative Elkins said, there was an OLA report that we requested, and then changes were made based on it, and we're kind of seeing the results of that. That's really useful in one area, but it does feel like there's some other areas that this doesn't connect to. If we can understand that problem, then we can understand better how to solve it. Just some thoughts, and thank you, Chair.
Yes, I appreciate that, Representative Pinto. He's definitely on our list for a future hearing.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yes, thank you. Let's see. Was there another question? Okay. So I have one more, if you will indulge me. Just back to the 5 to 10% that they can so it's the agency that receives the 5% for managing the grant, or 10% if it's competitively awarded. Is there a similar scheme for what the grantee retains for performing the grant for the administrative side, or is that just up to each individual grant contract, how much the grantee is allowed to use for administrative costs?
Madam Chair, I believe it's the latter. I don't want to speak out of turn. I'm not, I don't have that technical answer, but I believe it would be part, everything is part of the grant contract and kind of all of the terms and conditions that a grantee has to follow. So you're correct in that the kind of 5% and 10% for new grants, that's for the state agency to do all of the kind of administration work that I've talked through. How a grantee is doing the work is really set up in their budget and work plan that's approved by a state agency. So that could lay out, you know, salaries and expenses and, you know, kind of all of those budget lines. You know, we could certainly get you more information about what that might look like.
Great. No, I did expect it would be up to individual grantees, but I just wondered if there was a more systemic look at that. Let's see. I think I have one more question. And then we will let you go. But this has been very helpful. So I think just to close it out, I would like to know, clearly my personal view is that we should change your may to must on certain requirements. But clearly you don't want a lot of new authority. So what are the ways that we can help you be more effective at managing state grants? And do you believe your purview includes all agency grants, not just the ones managed by the Department of Admin?
Madam Chair, to your last question, yes, our purview is certainly broader than kind of our own portfolio in terms of the you know, grants management authority. We believe that with the specific requirements that are in statute right now, we have the right complement of staffing and capacity. I think with any additional requirements, we would have to look at what sort of other staffing capacity might be necessary. We spent, you know, these new statutes have only been on the books for, you know, a year, 2 years. So we've spent a lot of time trying to just implement that. As I alluded to, we're really hoping to get more into how we can do this better. Now that, you know, we're going to be hiring a couple more people, we have the funding to do that. We want to make sure we're hiring the right kind of people to do the right work. So, you know, I think that this isn't the end of the conversation and how we're trying to implement the statute. We're just getting started. So I really appreciate this conversation, you know, to get your insight into that as well.
Great, thank you. Members, it's been a great discussion. I appreciate everyone being here, and we will look forward to next week's hearing. And Ms. Christensen, we really appreciate your work. I look forward to, I am working on a bill to kind of strengthen some of the mays to musts or shall, and so I would welcome your feedback on that. With that, members, I believe we are adjourned. Thank you.